Welcome to Biblical Higher Ed Talk, where we tap into the wisdom of leaders and practitioners of biblical higher education for the advancement of colleges and universities teaching the way of Christ in the modern world. Each week, we'll tackle topics around leading your organization, expanding your impact in the world, and deepening your faith through Christ-centered conversations. Ready to make a difference in the lives of your faculty, staff, and students? Then let's begin our journey.
Today on Biblical Higher Ed Talk, I sit down with Todd Hall, founder CEO of Flourishing Metrics. He's also a faculty affiliate at the Harvard Human Flourishing Program. He's a professor of psychology at Biola University, and he's an ABHE senior fellow. And we're going to discuss the current state of spirituality in biblical and Christian higher education. The author of the book, The Connected Life, Todd talks about the importance of engaging college students with spiritual matters. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm your host, Philip Dearborn, president of ABHE, and we are honored to have with us Todd Hall, founder, CEO of Spiritual Metrics, a faculty affiliate for the Harvard Human Flourishing Program, professor of psychology at Biola University, and finally, and I think most importantly, an ABHE senior fellow. And I often joke with Todd that he needs either multiple business cards or one really big business card to capture all of the different things that he does. But I've invited Todd in to talk about the state of spirituality and the important role our colleges and universities play in shaping our students' spiritual opportunities and growth. So welcome, Todd. And thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Phillips. Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Absolutely. So before we get into some questions, just so that our audience can get to know you a little bit, kick off our conversation by reflecting back over your life experiences, your ministry experiences, your higher ed experiences. Share with us one defining moment that God used in your life to propel you forward, either in your personal life or professional life.
Sure. Yeah. One moment that comes to mind was in college. So often a pivotal time, right? Mm-hmm. When a lot of my relationships were kind of, you know, several important ones in particular had kind of fallen apart. And I had been kind of using my spirituality in a way to cope with emotional pain from my childhood growing up. And I wasn't super aware of that at the time. So, you know, and these kind of relationships were sort of crashing and burning, I came to the end of myself. I think probably the first time in a real way that I realized I was trying to do the spiritual journey alone and I needed God's help. And so I turned to God, you know, and sort of asked for help. And one day was wandering around campus, you know, when this happened, and wandered into the chapel at my Christian college. For no apparent reason, it was just, you know, sort of a prayer walk, wandering around. And there was somebody speaking in the chapel. To this day, I have no idea who was speaking or what the topic really was. I just sat down in the back for no more than 5 or 10 minutes. But I distinctly remember this, that the speaker said something and I felt like God spoke to me, you know, through the speaker. And so it wasn't, you know, it was one of those moments, again, that I remember. It wasn't an audible voice, but it was a very distinct impression. And what I heard was something like, there are some things inside of you that you need to face and you need me and others to help you. And I will be with you and I will guide you. And so that was, you know, at a really pivotal moment that kind of was a turning point in a way that led me to really open myself up more to God and to some people in my life and get some help that really led to a healing process and led to a lot of the work I do today that we're going to talk about.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that. What a great example too of you never know who's listening to us or who's watching us, right? for the good or for the bad, right? But how God used that. And I'm on video for one of our promotional ABHE videos saying this at the end of it. And I so believe it that on this side of eternity, we never will know all of the connections of how God uses us and what we say and what we do to advance his kingdom. But on the other side of eternity, we'll have opportunity to reflect. And boy, that'll happen, right? Someday that person who had no clue ministered to you and really set a trajectory for your life forward.
Yes.
Wow. Beautiful. Thanks for sharing that.
So, yeah, you're welcome.
So let's talk then, because you said this part of that shaping then for you was kind of the journey that you've been on dealing with issues of spirituality. So you've given so much of your life to it. In fact, the inventory stuff that you've been working on, you've been at it over 20 years. Why is this such an area of passion for you?
So that also kind of goes back to my story, Philip. And I've told this in different context, tell a little bit of the story in my book, The Connected Life, because it really is pivotal in why I'm passionate about this and do this kind of work. And so the short version of the story is that as far back as I can remember, my mom struggled with pretty significant mental health issues and sadly still does to this day, and left the family when I was pretty young, about 9 years old. Not a lot of contact with her at that point. When there was contact, it was difficult and challenging. And so that led to a lot of disconnection, relational disconnection within my family and friends and really within myself. And I, as we all do, I developed ways to cope with the pain, but in the end they were kind of short term and they kind of backfired and led to a real sense of kind of emptiness and less authentic relationships. And the feeling of being alone and disconnected also seeped into my relationship with God. Really up through my college years and a lot during college, I felt really distant from God, even though I was reading the Bible, I was taking Bible classes, but I just felt very distant from God. And I really didn't understand why. And later, through a journey really of healing, I realized that all this pain and disconnection that I felt in my relationship with God was linked back to these, early formative childhood experiences. And so, basically I realized through my own story and growth over time that our most important human relationships deeply form us and shape our experience of God and our relationship with God. And so if we're going to experience deep healing and growth spiritually, emotionally, all of that at the core of our being, we need to address our relational dynamics and emotions because they're really an integral part of our spiritual life, right? We can't separate those. So that's part of what I realized over time. And so as I started to see that in a, sort of a nascent form early on, I realized that psychology had a lot of tools to help us understand and promote spiritual growth. And that's really what led me to study clinical psychology and get into this field, particularly for the purpose of integrating psychology and theology and really trying to understand spiritual growth. So that goes all the way back to my dissertation was on the relationship between spiritual and psychological maturity. And it's just developed from there.
Yeah, which is you've added tremendously to our understanding of psychology and theology through your books and through all of the instruments that you've developed on spiritual well-being and emotional well-being. And folks sometimes think that they can't co-mingle, right? It's like psychology is the world's approach to dealing with issues. And apart from the word of God, you can't, which there's some validity to that. But there actually is quite a bit of interplay between those two disciplines.
Definitely, definitely. And that's, Philip, I mean, there's a whole, sort of field or subfield of, integration and just wrestling with those kinds of issues. And I would just say, for people who are interested in that and kind of delving deeper into that, I co-wrote a book with my colleague, John Coe, called Psychology and the Spirit, that really, that's what it's about. It addresses all of that is how do we bring these two fields together? And really, what does that look like?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing the context, obviously going back and kind of go into that first question I asked about, that defining moment. You think about all of the people that you've been able to touch that you don't even know through your books, but also through the instruments that you've developed for colleges and universities to use as catalytic moments of that speaker of no one knows who it is, but somehow God uses that into their context. And you will have an eternity to make some of those connections, realizing the impact that you have had. So give us, this is your content area. You have a lot of data behind you. Give us a high level summary of the state of spirituality today. What's the good news? What's the bad news?
Yeah, we could spend all day on this, but so I'll start with the bad news so we can end with the good news. So the bad news won't, this won't be a surprise to those of you listening, but one thing would be that we are living in the midst of a mental health and connection crisis. And so there's a lot of, data around that, as you mentioned, Philip. So, part of it's stress. There's no secret that there's an enormous amount of stress going on in the world today. There's been a pandemic, there are wars going on. There's been a ton of social unrest. And so that's going on, but that's amplified an already existing trend of rising mental health issues. So that was already happening before the pandemic, that mental health issues were on the rise. And research is showing a decline in mental health during the pandemic, you know, at least in the US. And this is one place we see this is the American Psychological Association does a report every year called Stress in America. And they concluded their 2020 report, so right, you know, during COVID, saying we are facing a national mental health crisis that could yield serious health and social consequences for years to come. So there's all this stress and mental health issues, but I would argue that the root cause really is social disconnection, which goes back to my story that I just mentioned.
Yeah,
these external stressors are going on. But underneath all that, I think that a lot of the signs and symptoms of stress are really due to social disconnection. And so as we would expect, we're seeing a rise in social disconnection in our society. One of the leaders who's speaking to this really well and directly is Dr. Vivek Murthy, who's our U.S. Surgeon General. So this is, he's really made this really the forefront of his agenda. And so in a recent report, there's a couple of reports that have come out of his office, one last May, and in that he describes social connection and why it's so important. He says social connection, the structure, function, and quality of our relationships with others is a critical and underappreciated contributor to individual and population health, community safety, resilience, and prosperity. And so really what the research shows, Philip, you know, this is a huge area of research, but it, just to kind of summarize it, is that over the last 50 years, so again, before the pandemic, really the last five decades, we've seen a decline in social networks, social participation, community involvement, and an increase in social isolation and loneliness. And so a lot of that is documented in the work of Robert Putnam, who wrote a book called Bowling Alone. It's kind of a landmark book that documents all this. What does it have to do with our spiritual lives? And so I would suggest that for the church, the problem goes deeper. And Dr. Murthy talks about, you know, a number of negative outcomes when there's lack of social connection, right? And I think that includes our spiritual health and well-being, because there's an intimate link between social and spiritual disconnection. So social disconnection has a profound impact on our experience of God and spiritual community, which, you know, I've already kind of touched on in my story. And so that connection crisis in our society has led to really kind of a parallel spiritual connection crisis. And there's, you know, there's a lot of reasons, but two probably stand out, and I've kind of alluded to these already. One is that our perception of God is shaped by our most important human relationships, right? That was part of my story that I mentioned. And second is that part of this is the template in our mind or subconscious strategy that we develop to protect ourselves from emotional pain. You know, the pain of disconnection often allows us to maintain a pseudo connection, but it kind of backfires in a lot of ways, and again, influences our experience of God. So that's you know, one big point I would make is just the mental health and connection crisis that's really led to kind of a parallel spiritual connection crisis. Another major point on the bad side would be, you know, we're seeing kind of a epidemic of pastoral burnout. I'm sure you've heard talk about this as well, you know, particularly due to the pandemic, just so many difficulties and struggles in our churches with the polarization and just how do we deal with the pandemic and people not being able to go to church for quite a while. And so, you know, there's a lot of data on this, and I've definitely seen this in my own circles, you know, just doing training for Christian leaders, a number of which are pastors, to really just have very challenging, difficult, hurtful stories. So that's, you know, that's, I think, a challenge that we need to face and address. And then along with that, there's been a lot of, you know, church hurt. And I see this talked a lot about among my graduate students who are, you know, in this younger generation coming up, and they just experienced a lot of hurtful things at churches. And we've seen a number of prominent pastoral leaders and Christian leaders sort of go off the rails, and just the ripple effect of that has been really devastating. So that, you know, those are some of the things I see in terms of the struggles of spirituality.
Biblical Higher Ed Talk is sponsored by ABHE, the Association for Biblical Higher Education. At ABHE, bringing the love and light of Christ to the world is reflected in our drive to see our member institutions flourish, leading them to a time of success for their institution and giving them the tools and insights they need to look toward the future. Interested in learning more about membership with ABHE? Visit us at abhe.org or send us an email to membership@abhe.org. ABHE is your partner committed to advancing biblical higher education for kingdom impact. Now, back to the show.
Which is kind of interesting, Todd, that when you think about biblical and Christian higher education, we're kind of in the crossroads of all of that bad news, because a number of our institutions are preparing pastors and are preparing church leaders who burn out or who make poor moral choices, and our students are, you know, involved in culture and society and the disconnect that they're having. So on our campuses, like, this becomes a pretty significant problem. The mental health, the lack of spirituality that we're all experiencing is kind of all converging on biblical and Christian higher education.
Yes. Yeah. No, that's a great point, Philip. It really is. Yeah. It's such a, you know, as I mentioned, such a crucial time. The good news is I think that the mental health crisis and all these struggles has led to more openness to talk about mental health issues and relational dynamics and emotions and how that is an integral part of our, you know, spirituality and just, you know, generally kind of to talk about spirituality in a more holistic way that, you know, again, includes psychology and also social justice and community aspects and, you know, really addressing things on a communal level and racial and social and, you know, justice issues, which I think are, you know, really important and very biblical, right? I mean, we see all throughout scripture that, I mean, God has a heart for the marginalized. I mean, you see that over and over, and Jesus, you know, taught about that, and we see that reflected in his life. So I think, you know, there's some good signs there and good news. And part of that, I think, is there's a new, amidst the pastoral burnout, there's also a new generation of pastors coming online that really are grasping the importance of psychology and our relationships as part of our spirituality and are openly talking about these issues and integrating them and talking about, you know, psychotherapy. And, you know, yes, there are some issues and challenges we still need to be careful of and talk about, but I think that's good news. Because we need to, I just think that's a holistic biblical approach to spirituality, right? Is our relationships and our psychological dynamics, which is a lot of what my writing has been about, Philip, you know, it's just that this is how God created us, right? He created us for relationships with him, with other people. And sanctification is really about growing in love for God and others. That's a relational endeavor, right? And so psychology helps us to understand that, gives us tools for that.
Yeah. And so as you mentioned, a lot of your writing is centered on this. One of the things that you talk about in The Connected Life is attachment relationships. What is an attachment relationship and why are they so important?
Yeah, that's a great question and a big topic. There's a lot on this, but, you know, just to kind of summarize it, this goes back to something I alluded to earlier, that our deepest sense of who we are is really shaped most profoundly by our closest human relationships. And that's what psychologists call attachment relationships. And the clearest examples of that would be, you know, a parent-child relationship would be the prototype of that. So parental figure would be an attachment figure, but also our relationship with God, you know, that we generally become attached to God and God is an attachment figure to us. We can also become attached to a mentor, a close friend, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend, spouse, teacher, coach, therapist, right? So, you know, anyone who really plays a meaningful role in your development. And so what it means to be an attachment figure, you know, is that you become attached to someone when you rely on them for two things: comfort when you're upset and a sense of internal security, which attachment theory calls a secure base that allows you to explore your world both externally, but also internally, you know, exploring your own story and especially, you know, painful kinds of things that you need to process and resolve. So what happens is that patterns that occur in our important relationships are etched or encoded into a gut level or implicit form of memory, which is called, you know, implicit memory of how relationships work for us based on our past experiences. So those past experiences and relationships are always online shaping and influencing how we relate. I call them attachment filters because that's how they function, right? They filter our perception of relationships without our conscious awareness. That's part of why they're so important. You asked, you know, why are they important? Because they filter our perception and experience of relationships with God, with, you know, especially the important people in our life outside of our awareness. And so they have a big impact and we need to, you know.
Is there a formative age that these relationships where the attachment happens more readily than another age. Does that make sense?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. The first 2 to 3 years of life, there's a lot of brain development that happens, particularly in the parts of the brain that process social and emotional information and process these areas of attachment. And so, you know, one of those areas is called the orbital frontal cortex, or OFC for short. And that goes through a growth spurt, you know, around 2 to 3. And so it does have a, you know, that early developmental period does have a pretty significant impact. It doesn't mean that everything is set in stone, you know, by the time you're 3 years old. That's something we've learned from, you know, neuroscience in the past few decades, is this idea of neuroplasticity, that the brain is constantly developing and can develop. And we, so, you know, which means we can always grow and develop. But there are formative experiences early in life that really do, you know, shape us quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. And because some of the needs that you talked about that we attach because of particular needs, those are higher order needs than ages 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, right? Those are more needs of safety and food and shelter and just for basic survival. But the two areas that you mentioned are definitely higher order needs. That's where it happens over time, because, you know, a 2-year-old's not going to have a coach that's going to have an impact on their life or a spiritual advisor.
Right. It's the basic need for comfort when they're distressed, and to, which is what helps people learn to regulate their emotions.
Uh-huh.
And then also this idea of internal sense of security comes from being comforted, and this gut level sense that I know my parent or attachment figure has my back, right? If I do get distressed, I can go to them and I'll be comforted. And that develops this internal sense of security. And that's so important. And it is a higher order need. And one of the ways we see that, Philip, is, so John Bowlby developed attachment theory along with Mary Ainsworth. And, you know, as he was developing the theory back in the 1940s, there were a lot of children in Britain and some in North America who would be sent to these foundling homes if a parent, you know, a parent was sick or couldn't take care of their child for some reason. And they weren't assigned a caregiver. So the caregivers sort of were, you know, interchangeable, and they couldn't develop an attachment relationship. And what we saw in this scenario is that 10 to 20% of those children actually died, even though they had, you know, all their biological needs were met, food and shelter and all of that. They basically died from lack of relationship, lack of attachment.
Wow. Wow. Which emphasizes, I'm listening to this or interacting with this with our granddaughter who was just born several months ago, about how critical it is, the role of parents and grandparents and people to make sure that those attachments are positive, because it does, it sets a trajectory forward and plays a critical role in who we ultimately become. Like you said, we can talk forever about this. This is fascinating stuff. So switching back to our college and universities, you do a lot of work with your inventories, working with Christian Biblical higher education. So you get to see what's happening on many of our college campuses. So this is kind of in reverse. There's a lot of good things that are obviously happening from a spiritual formation perspective, but are there things that are perhaps well-intended, either programs or approaches on our campuses that actually work against fostering an ideal spiritual context?
Yeah, I think to answer that, I would say, you know, it's not so much just one program. It's more holistically, when you look at the overall, you know, sort of approach to spiritual development. And I think what doesn't work or leave something missing is when schools focus exclusively or almost exclusively on large events that tend to emphasize teaching and information, which is very important. There's a place for that. But if that's all they're doing, and so there's some campuses that kind of emphasize that a little bit more, although I do think there's a growing trend to move, you know, to broaden out, which is great. But to the extent that that's happening, I think that that misses an important element of formation, because it focuses on only one type of knowing, which is explicit knowledge. And I talk a lot about this in my books, The Connected Life and Relational Spirituality, but there's two types of knowing. There's explicit knowledge, which is very important, understanding, you know, God and doctrine and, you know, how we're supposed to live. But then there's this implicit relational knowledge, which is super important. So another way to say that is, you know, we have to feel God's truth. God's truth has to sink down into our hearts, right? So that we really inhabit and live out of it. And so I think to the extent that campuses in their overall program are really focusing mainly on teaching explicit knowledge, they're really missing kind of some of the relational aspects of formation that are really important.
Yeah. And your mind goes to, well, you know, how to address spiritual formation on a campus? Well, we have required chapel for our students 5 days a week. And that's our approach to spiritual formation. And while that is good from an information perspective, there are other relational elements that if you're not addressing those, you're just putting out a lot of good information. You're not necessarily fostering that environment for spiritual growth to actually happen.
Right, right. Yeah. And just to add to that, Philip, I would say, you know, also students need, you know, they need venues to just process the information at a deeper level, and they need to see intellectual humility modeled, you know. So sometimes there are contexts where, you know, there may be, you know, debates or teaching on things, but there's, you know, intellectual humility is lacking, and there's not a venue or a place to kind of process what this means for me more deeply rather than just information, as you said.
Yeah. And especially in today's culture, because that's part of their makeup and how they process information, is they need the space in order to do that, which refers back to one of your other points, is that there's an openness to spirituality, and we need to create those spaces for that to happen, and for them to intellectually engage with information and not ignore it or diminish their perspective, because that's the framework from which they're coming.
Right.
They're trying to wrestle with these big ideas of what they experience versus what does the Word of God say about this, and how does all of that come together?
Right, right, exactly. So it's a matter of, you know, yes, the teaching, the explicit knowledge is very important, but it's got to be integrated with relational processing, especially because, you know, as you were kind of alluding to, Philip, I mean, there's so much information accessible right nowadays with social media and the internet and now AI on the scene, right? But a lot of it is conflicting, and it's not synthesized, integrated biblical worldview, right? In order for them to really, again, inhabit it, they need space to really process their questions and doubts and you know, synthesize a lot of this information.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're coming to the end of our episode, and we have about 3 minutes left, which is perfect. I'll give you a minute for each one of these. How about that? In your book, The Connected Life, you have listeners who are leaders in biblical and Christian higher education. What would you say, as the author of the book, what are the top three things that our listeners need to know to be more effectively leading the spiritual elements of their campuses?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, Philip. So The first one I'm not going to count as one of the three, just a sort of a preliminary important thing, is the way I frame this sometimes is the idea that you are the tool. And that's the idea that our own growth and development as leaders is foundational. So Christian leaders on our campuses, spiritual development, you know, whatever the department is, as well as pastors, need to be involved in their own growth process, mm-hmm. right? Because that's going to impact how they show up to lead and interact with people. So, you know, that's kind of a given in a way, but I think it's important to say that. So I want to just mention that and then go into the three. I would say the first, just, you know, just broadly speaking from both of these recent books, Relational Spirituality and then Connected Life, which, so by the way, Relational Spirituality is the academic book. If you want a deeper dive, Connected Life is a trade book, kind of a trade version of that. Mm-hmm. So the first thing I would say is, you know, what I've already alluded to is addressing attachment to God, addressing the importance of attachment and how that plays out and influences our relationship with God. So just understanding that everyone, every student, staff, faculty member on your campus has a story of deep attachment needs that shapes their experience of God and their perception of God, and how they relate to God and their spirituality more generally. And then along with that, just understanding that transformation occurs through new relational experiences, which goes back to what we were just talking about, Philip, right? Of just, students need spaces to process things relationally, not just information, even though that's important. So that's the first thing I would say. Second thing I would say is related, is addressing the two ways of knowing. Make sure you think about how are we helping students integrate explicit knowledge about God and theology and doctrine and how to live, and implicit relational knowledge. So a deeper gut level knowing of how to love, essentially. And so that can inform your programming, because we need both of these approaches to help them integrate. So how I describe this sometimes is, you know, on the one hand, students need to feel God's truth, as I mentioned. So that's kind of one way of integrating. And then we also need to help them interpret their experience, you know, so that's, you know, that's sort of like top down and bottom up, right? It's like top down is, okay, there's, you know, God's truth that we're learning, but we need to feel and experience that so we can inhabit it. So how do we help our students do that? And then we also need to help them interpret their experience. And a lot of that happens through story. And in order to do all that, we need to create psychological safety so that students feel safe to share their story and process it, right? And so we could elaborate on that, but that's kind of a second major thing. And then a third point is just a way to think about community. As you think about a community, you know, that you're establishing or, you know, shaping on your campus. And so one of the things I talk about in the books is this idea of authoritative spiritual communities. And so that's drawn from the authoritative parenting literature. And essentially what that is it's the idea that we need to integrate and blend, on the one hand, warmth and connection, and on the other hand, what I would call moral structure. And so there's actually been some work by social scientists on this idea of authoritative communities, because they saw that they really concluded that a lot of the problems we're seeing among our children in the last few decades is due to the breakdown of community and the need for connection. And so, and this wasn't an explicitly Christian group. There are a few Christians on that panel, but they really came up with this idea, authoritative community. And I think it really is a beautiful way to describe the church in a way, right? Mm-hmm. The church is and should be an authoritative community, right? There's love, warmth, connection, encouragement, bearing each other's burdens, right? Ephesians 4 is all about this. But there's also moral structure, and they're multi-generational communities. And the moral structure is that, you know, as I become attached to leaders in my community, I want to be like them, and I care about their evaluation of me, right? Mm. And so if I cross a line or go outside of God's boundaries, you know, in some way, that's going to impact that relationship. And so there is a moral structure there, and that's how it gets internalized, right? Is that I see how my leaders are living out God's values, and I take that in because I want to be like them because I'm connected to them. So authoritative spiritual community, I think, is a really nice way to just help frame what you're trying to create in your community.
Yeah. Wow. Well, we've reached the end of our time together. So thank you, Todd, for sharing your wisdom and experiences with us today.
Well, thank you, Philip. Really appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. And if you'd like more information about Todd's books that he's written, we'll be sure to put links in the episode description so that you can dive a little bit deeper. And like you said, one of the books is more academic. So if you're a professor and teaching in the subject area, I would definitely point you in that direction. And the other one is a little bit a lighter read for those of us who are directly ministering to students within the educational context. So until next time, stay kingdom focused.
Thanks for listening to Biblical Higher Ed Talk. For more, follow or subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform. We're delighted that you chose to spend a part of your day with us and encourage you to reach out to us with feedback, topics, or guests for the show. You can get in touch with Philip, your host, via LinkedIn or at biblicalhighereduTalk@abhe.org. Biblical Higher Ed Talk is a production of the Association for Biblical Higher Education in association with Westport Studios. Views expressed on this show are those of the participants and may not reflect the views of ABHE or Westport Studios. Bring light and life to your biblical higher educational organization by inquiring about membership with ABHE at abhe.org. We'll catch you next time.